Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Deadite Bites, the No Ship Network podcast on the Starz television series Ash vs. Evil Dead. I am your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
Tonight, we are discussing Season 3, Episode 3, Apparently Dead. This one was written by Ivan Raimi, and it was directed by a pair of brothers, Diego and Andres Mezavaldes. So, the writing, of course, is familiar, but I haven't heard of these two guys, but they did a terrific job.
Right.
So, overall, what did you think of the episode?
I really like this episode because it's setting up, or you see Ruby's plan start to take off, where she's turning Brandy against Ash rather easily.
Yeah.
But she's also employing Brock, bringing Brock back. And then also, we have the parallel story where Dalton is being worked through, or it's... I can't tell if it's like the Deadite that's already gotten a hold of him before he turns, or because he's already was against Pablo prior to that possession, but there's seeds being planted in Kelly's mind, possibly against Pablo.
Yeah, it's kind of a setup episode. I think there's going to be big things in episode 4 and 5 of the season. It'll like come to a good mid season high point. And then we'll get, you know, what we're going to get in the rest of the season. But that's going to be a tongue twister. Hashtag bring Brock back. Don't say that fast too many times. But spoiler alert, if everybody saw the preview for next week, it looks like he's there.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting. But, you know, like they say, like Tapper was saying, you know, the one thing about the Evil Dead world is that nobody stays dead. So we'll see how that pans out. But I felt the same way about it. I think the first two episodes of this, just they came in barnstorming and then they kicked it up a notch, kind of like the High Fidelity compilation rules. You got to kick it up a notch with the next song. And now episode 3 has leveled off a little bit. Not bad by any stretch, just not quite as exciting. There's no scene in the cryobank that anything like that kind of rivals it. But I would still say that a average episode of this television show is worth more to me for my viewing time than even the best episodes of a lot of other shows that are out there. So it is no way a slight to say what we're saying.
Yeah, this was a funny episode, but it wasn't funny in the way episode 2, Booth 3 was, where I was laughing out loud. But that shower scene was funny to me. I was laughing on the inside genuinely about it because they were playing with a trope, but with a Deadite.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times when you have rain or shower scenes with characters, it's a rebirth, or there's like something that's going to change, and he's been reborn out of the grave, so to speak. And then they have this ponderous moment when they're in the shower, and you know,
yeah,
it's usually in a drama you'll see something like that. It hit its mark well. That was actually my favorite part of that episode.
It was thoroughly disgusting.
It was disgusting too.
The practical effects on that were astonishing. It was just.
Yeah, the heebie-jeebies. Sloughing off the Deadite flesh, like big chunks.
All right, so let's dig in and slough off some of this episode and see where we end up. So this episode opens up with Candace Barr's funeral held at the Elk River Community Chapel. And Ash and Brandy discuss options for her living situation after he tries to give her some flowers that were right there when she walked, you know, when you walk in at a typical Ash buffoonery, not thinking of stuff and then going, oh, I probably should have made this gesture or whatever. Just not used to the social niceties. I mean, who knows how used to it he was at the beginning of all of this, but living alone like he has for so long, he's just become this self-centered, like, person who's, I'm just going to stay out of the sight of the world and I won't care about nothing. And that's what you get. You know, I suppose. But she's thinking about taking up Ruby, a.k.a. Miss Previtt's, offer of letting her stay at her house until she graduates, which is as 4 months, I think, is what we found out in the first episode. So, but then Ash is like, look, you know, I'll leave the seat down. You can stay with me. He's trying, you know, he's making that attempt to be dad.
And also the $50 a week. It was just a suggestion.
So was this what he was going to pay her? Be like, hey... I'll give you $50
no,
a week.
No, I think he wanted rent. That's what it was.
That's awesome. That makes him a double asshole.
Yes.
Like he's going to charge his kid rent, whose mom just died. He's like, yeah, you could stay in my house for $200 a month. Come on.
Like giving her $50 a week. That, I mean, what's wrong with that?
I know, like as a payoff, like, hey, you know, like child support. Like that wouldn't be shit. You know, that wouldn't be anything if you were trying to give somebody that for child support. So it's kind of like, hey, like a buy-off, like, you know, I'll give you $50 a week if you, you know, go bye-bye or whatever. But I don't know. I guess it makes more sense that he would be charging her
rent
to live there in Cheryl's room, which makes it even funnier. I feel dumb that I didn't think about it. But
it's pretty steep for a high schooler.
Yeah, it is. If you don't, I mean, I remember when I was in high school and I was working, $50 a week would have killed me to pay for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But so he goes over to have a private viewing of the corpse, and he learns that the head has been put back on. And he only goes to look because he has learned that the head has been put back on. And he was like, you son of a bitch. I mean, good job. Good job. Because this is the worst thing you can do with a deadite, because besides killing them with the Kandarian dagger, the only surefire way to get rid of them is to cut off the head. And so that was already done. And now we've got, you know, the head being sewn back on. So it's like, he's not really sure. Is this going to work? Or is this just going to be, you know, a false alarm? So he goes over with a fork from the catering table and just starts poking her. And when he sees that everything's okay.
Just to be
okay,
sure she's done.
Yeah, no, that's what, stick a fork in it. I'm done. And, of course, shenanigans ensue. You know, he thinks everything's going to be okay. And there was a runner-up for Metal Mike quote of the week when he was like, I'll always remember you, or at least I won't forget you again. So and as he's leaving the room, before everything starts up, he turns around and he says, out of all of the girls, you gave the best. And he doesn't get to finish, but we know what he was going to say. And she disappears. So he goes looking for her, gets pulled into the coffin, and we get a really good scene inside it. I thought that was creative and imaginative, you know, using the interior of a coffin as a scene for a fight with a deadite. Like,
right.
That.
And especially because you knew he was about to say blowjob.
Right.
Or head or head. Whatever he was going to say. And she starts to crawl up from the bottom like she's about to do that. And then the use of the photo was,
oh my God,
resourceful.
Yes, that was excellent. I really like that. And it gave me a little flashback to Goonies when they're in the attic. And he's like, come here, Mikey.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a kiss. When he's sticking his tongue through the.
Yeah.
I always get it mixed up. Is that Corey Haim or Corey Feldman? I never remember.
That was Corey Feldman.
Okay, Corey Feldman sticks his tongue through the hole in the painting. He's like, you're ruining my painting. You're ruining my joke. That's what I thought of right away. But when he pulls it down and it just shreds off the tongue from the Candace deadite, and then they ensue from there, and then he ends up decapitating her again.
With the photo.
With the 5x10 in the glass, or the 8x10, sorry, in the glass.
What did you think of his suit and his white patent leather shoes?
Yeah, I felt like there was some like weird like Elvis impersonation going on or something. I don't know. What did you think?
I think he thought he looked good.
Yeah, I think he did too. But in that way that people who are really out of touch with what looks good currently.
And I think that's why the deadite Candace said, oh, you look so good. Like she was playing with them, because you know how they get in your heads.
Yeah. So she's playing off his vanity, like, or maybe his insecurity or something, because he knows like, this is the best suit I got, people. You know, this is it. And this is what I'm wearing.
Very few men can pull off a plaid suit. Mads Mikkelsen.
Outside of him, don't try it.
Right.
Just don't try it. So just like old times, except, you know, this isn't the Kroger parking lot. For people who don't know, if you don't live around a Kroger, it's a grocery store. And I don't know if I thought they were regional to the South, but this is set in Michigan. So I guess they've got them up there too.
We don't have them here anymore.
No, but I know they have them in Georgia. So
I mean, the part of Michigan that my family's from, I didn't see any Krogers there.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're not there.
Right, right. It's a big state.
Yeah.
So he goes through all of this, and then he's going to get out of the coffin, but that is not to be. And his metal hand hits the little support, and boom, he's knocked unconscious by the coffin lid. So our next scene is everybody waiting for the ceremony to start, the memorial service to start for Candace, and Ash is just mysteriously not showing up. So Brandy gets up there to read her eulogy as well as she can. She's a choked up teenager who just lost her mom, so understandably she's not doing that hot. And then there's some thumping from the coffin, and everybody's like, what the fuck? I wouldn't have been able to keep reading at that point, but
no.
Yeah, I would have had to go and lift the lid and be like, what is going on in,
like,
here?
Somebody check that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my morbid curiosity would have got the better of me, and I would have lifted the lid.
Not me.
But I would have done it like, I would think that I'd be all stealthy and do it from the side and lift it up. So that way whatever comes out is going to miss me, you know? But That's just how it plays out in my imagination. I don't know how it would actually work in reality. So, but I guess I should say before this all happens, Ruby comforts Brandy as they wait for Ash to arrive. And so then everything that I already said happens. And then he finally comes out of the coffin and he's... This is a laugh out loud moment when he comes out. He's like, fucking hell. Like, he's just like, Jesus Christ, what the hell else can go wrong today? And swings his legs over the edge and her head falls off and just rolls down the step. And everybody is just aghast, as you would be.
Uh-huh.
You know? So he kind of puts the head back in. And
I like how he takes the head and hides it behind himself and he walks backwards like he's trying to erase the fact that that just happened.
It's like a childish thing or a slapstick comedy thing. Like, oh, out of sight, out of mind. Nobody's going to know that this just happened if I put it behind my head.
How can I best minimize this experience?
And the show is always at its best when it's doing a couple of things. It actually excels at a few things, really. But one of the things that it really excels at is the mixture of horror and comedy. It's no secret at this point. I mean, if you like the movies, you knew that. But this kind of stuff really hits those notes perfectly. Like, you know, the head's already been seen by everybody. It was on your lap when you got out to keep extending this head joke as we keep going on with it. And he tries to hide it behind him like, nothing to see here, folks. Move along, move along. So anyway, it gets put back in the coffin. He shuts the lid and tells her, keep reading. Of course she can't. You know, there's no way you're going to keep being able to do that. So she leaves. And
the entire room's got to be in shock because I don't know how there wasn't anybody just like in uproar over what just happened.
Yeah, like somebody get up. Are you fucking serious here? This is really happening? I mean, how would you react to that if that happened? I mean, this thing doesn't happen except maybe one in a billion times. Well, I mean, I don't think it's ever happened like this, but
there would be at least one outspoken first that would start the mob fury.
I would probably just leave. Because I'd be like, something illegal is probably happening here, so I'm going to go. You know, there's like some ordinance or law against corpse defilement, so I'm not going to be a party to this. So this is where Ash sees Ruby for the first time because she makes the contact and mm-hmm. says, well, Mr. Williams, you know, I just want to give my condolences. He's like, oh, it's okay. I didn't know her that well. Wait a minute, Ruby. And she plays the part of Mrs. Privet for a couple of lines longer, just enough for Brandy to come back mm-hmm. and see Ash in that. So the whole episode is really geared towards catching Ash in moments where he looks like he's the asshole, like he's the bad guy, like he's the one that's doing something wrong and is possibly out of his mind. So Brandy gets that impression of him, and it's orchestrated perfectly, whether it's this scene or the stuff with Brock or whatever have you. And it works because it's really not that hard to put him up there as a patsy yeah. for that kind of stuff.
Lucky for Ruby, he doesn't need much rope.
No, he doesn't. You could just give him a little ball of yarn, really, and he's going to be able to hang himself with it, honestly. So, but as she leaves, after Brandy leaves, she's like, I'm getting my stuff out of your creepy house, and I'm never going to see you again. And so she goes, and then Ruby's just like, hey, you can't do nothing to me. But I would hate to have something bad happen to your little girl. And this is where Ash says, be careful, Ruby. Never get between a papa bear and his cub. So a little bit of a mission statement, possibly for the good guys, of what's going to happen for the rest of the season, I think. Ruby's going to be made to pay for this meddling to some degree. Of course, you're going to need a Kandarian dagger to do a whole lot of damage to this incarnation of Ruby, at least. And on that note, Kelly Pablo and the other guy, Dalton, show up, and you know, Kelly's like, what the hell is going on here? This looks like a snuff film. But they're not too surprised. At least Kelly and Pablo are not too surprised. Like, yeah, this Ash, I mean, it just follows him around. So
yeah, it's just anything in Ash's wake, even out of wake.
So they're actually in the wake of the wake.
Right.
At this point. So Ash informs them that everybody's favorite evil skank is back. And they're like, Ruby, Ruby. And Dalton, of course, is like, who's Ruby? He's like, oh, boy. I'm not going to explain this to you right now. But I think the impression is there that he's getting it. He's learning it from the context that this is the dark one. So the one that survived that he was talking about last episode. So then Pablo steps away and he has another vision. And it's probably the funniest scene to me. And that, well, the stuff with Brock later on is equally as funny, I guess. So I guess they're on a level. But this is the first funny scene in the movie that had me laughing a lot. And so he has another vision, and the naked lady tells him where to find the Kandarian dagger, and that his Brujo uncle needs him to find it. And I don't know how I feel about naked lady. I don't know if this is...
You're wondering who she's really working for?
Yeah, I do.
I had that thought, too.
Because why wouldn't his weird Brujo uncle, as Ash always referred to him, show up and say it himself? Because
she's got more than two faces.
That's true. Yeah. So there's
she's not
just
two-faced. She's three-faced.
Damn. Wow. So she can throw shade all different directions if she needed to. You know, because I feel like his uncle would be able to have enough agency in the afterlife in a supernatural sense to be able to deliver a message to Pablo if he needed. And I suspect that the actor who played him is going to be back to reprise his role this season, I think.
Especially if this is legit.
Right. Yeah. So Pablo's like, all right, yeah, I got you. I'll do all that. So, hey, maybe me and you could... I didn't catch your name. He's trying to throw on the smooth. He's not doing too bad of a job. I mean, maybe if she was mortal, she would have been like, yeah, I'll go out with you. Because he's like, we could go out and get some coffee, maybe go to a clothing store so you can get dressed.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anybody hit on a guardian angel or visiting apparition before. That was new.
Well, you know, Pablo's just, he's trying to end this dry spell that was there before, you know, we knew him at the beginning of season one. So
he's like, funny how we keep bumping into each other. Yeah. Something's happening here.
Me, you, the supernatural world, some coffee, maybe a shirt, some pants. So he comes back to the group. And he says, guys, I think I know where the dagger is. It's where the cabin was. So we're going to have to go back and get it. And Dalton's like, so how do you know this? Who told you this? He's like, a naked lady told me. He's just dumbstruck. He's like, So everybody says, road trip. And Ash, he says, sorry, guys, I got to take care of my daughter. So you're going to have to do this trip solo. There's three of them.
Yeah. I think he says you three have to do this solo or something like that. Yeah.
Dumb Ash.
Dalton was really excited about the road trip.
Yeah. Did you see the way Kelly looked at him? Because they said road trip together, her and Pablo. And then he kind of said it at like right after, but almost at the same time, just a little out of sync. And she looks at him like, oh,
amused.
Yeah. Like, you're excited about this. You're a ghost beater now. Is that what this is? So they get out to the site of where the cabin was. And of course, you know, I am horribly bad at predicting where this show is going to go, because I said that they're not going to go back to the cabin in this episode. We're not going to see the cabin in this episode, or this season rather. And I was maybe half right, because you don't actually see the actual cabin. Mm-hmm. You just go to the site and get to see some of the relics that
are
in
it. Some of its interior decorations.
And I'm wondering if some of those things are actually the real stuff from the original that they kept. Because
I hope so.
I think Raimi and Tappert, or one or both, have seemed to hold on to a lot of stuff that they have in movies and stuff like that. To be honest, if I had the storage space for it and I was a director, I would probably do the same thing, just in case. So I feel like Kelly's speaking for the audience when Dalton says, it's hard to believe that this was the place where evil was released. And this is where Kelly's speaking for us. She says, it's harder to believe that evil keeps bringing us back to the cabin. And this time it's not even here. Like, yeah, here we are again. So there's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek reference that they keep going back to this same well for, you know, what's going on. And I'm not knocking it. You know, I could probably watch 20 episodes in the cabin and not get tired of it. But that's just me, you know. So, as they start digging, Pablo unearths the deer's head and says, the dagger is definitely here. I was kind of hoping it would laugh a little bit, but the evil wasn't there yet. So it's just a deer's head at that point. There's nothing, you know, sinister about it.
So just because he finds one thing of the cabin, that's the thing that makes him sure? Or is there something to the deer head specifically?
I think it's the former. I think it's the fact that he found anything at all. Because then he's like, okay, well, if I find something, then there's stuff that survived from this thing collapsing and we'll find more.
Mm-hmm.
So after the wake, Ruby drops off Brandy at the Williams residence and says, okay, go ahead and get your stuff. I'll go in there if you want. And she says, no, I'm fine. I just got to say goodbye to Ash and get my stuff. And she says, okay, well, I'll be waiting for you at the, at the house. So Ruby proceeds to the cemetery where she does a little ritual where it looks like she has a moth?
A death head's moth.
Death's head moth.
Mm-hmm. From Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, that's what that is. Mm-hmm. All right, I thought it looked familiar. I just didn't know what that was. Neat. So she kills it and then pulls out the book, the good old trusty Necronomicon, and does another blood ritual. And it brings the moth back to life, but it also drips the same blood on Brock Williams' grave. And we get a very iconic, classic type hand coming out of the dirt, which was it wasn't a male's hand, it was a female's hand, but coming out of the dirt in some of the older, I believe it was the original Evil Dead movies, there was Linda's hand. I think it was supposed to be coming out of the dirt. So anyway.
Well, do you think that Brock's life, since we know he's coming back next episode because we saw it in the next time on, you think his life or supernatural life is connected to that death's head moth and that has to be killed in order to snuff him out completely?
That's a great point.
Because you see it in the house.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I hadn't put that together, but I can totally buy that.
And Brandy's the one who noticed it. So I wonder if she'll make the connection later and she'll be the one that kills it once she finally realizes.
Yeah. That
what's actually happening.
Which hopefully they don't draw that out too long. I mean, they're going to have to do it for a little while longer, but eventually, we've got a little bit of inside information, so we won't spoil anything, but hopefully it won't be too long till we get to that. Brandy is back at the house and she's in Cheryl's room and she's looking through some tapes and she turns on the cassette deck and this thing is old. This is an actual cassette deck. I've seen these before.
And it's yellowed.
Yeah, like the
it used
sun
to be white.
The sun has been hitting it. Cigarette smoke has been getting on it. And so she looks through a couple of tapes. And the first one is, it says Velvet Underground on it. But it's written in, like, it's not the band's logo. It's just written on there.
Marker.
With marker or something like that. And the second one, the second tape is labeled For Cheryl. But on the actual, where it would say the title, it says Baby's Mix. And it has a Joan Jett and the Blackhearts song. Or Joan Jett and the Blackhearts cover of Crimson and Clover, which she puts in and plays. As the music plays, we go back and forth between shots of Brandy looking around the house and the room. She sees a pic of her grandfather at the time, which is a drawing of Cheryl's, which actually she sees that before Ruby goes to the because she goes in and she lies down on the bed and she looks up and she sees the drawing that Cheryl did of Brock. Mm-hmm. So that kind of lets you know who it's going to be. But it looks like Lee Majors back in the day,
that drawing of him makes him look believable as Ash's dad.
Yeah, it does. You can see the resemblance, especially now. Well, even with the other drawing, too, of Ash when he was like a teenager, they look similar. So she tries on Ash's coat that has his little sticker that says Ash Williams owner. And she's like, no. It's almost like she's trying to say, am I making the right decision? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Can I be part of whatever this is, or do I need to just take myself out of the situation?
It's like that's an outward expression of her way and her options.
Yeah, that's what I believed it to be, which was a pretty clever way to do it without exposition vocally and having the song keep playing in the background. I thought that was a nice touch. So, people sometimes pass over comedies because they don't feel like there's enough character development and insight and things like that, but they can slide it in there if they want it to be there. So what's going on concurrently with this is that Brock Zombie has returned and we have the shower scene and his rebirth that we talked about before, which is gloriously disgusting and really fun to watch. And like we mentioned before, they kind of pull the switcheroo because they heighten the tension of her walking down the hallway.
Right.
And she gets to the door and she's about to turn the knob, but it opens itself. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Because maybe you have an inkling that it's not going to be all bad for her, because what zombie comes home and takes a shower before it starts killing people? So,
yeah,
you know,
good question.
I mean, so Ash pulls up and he gets out of the Delta and he comes into the house And now we have our Metal Mic quote of the week for me. And it comes from Brock when Ash says, "What are you doing?" And he goes, Brock looks at him and says, "Enjoying my couch now that I swept off all your nasty chips and shit." Which is completely believable because I can just see Ash as the kind of person who only washes his clothes when they get some sort of horrible stain on them. Probably sleeps right where he was just eating a bunch of chips or something, you know. And
he's oblivious about so many things.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think he brushes his teeth?
Probably not.
Yeah, definitely no flossing. But,
no flossing. But
brushing is up for debate.
Maybe only before dates.
Yeah. Even then, he probably just hits it with mouthwash, you know, a bunch of Listerine just to kind of get the smell out.
I mean, he does have a lower denture, so he lost his teeth for a reason.
That's true. That's true. I forgot about that. But we did recently just watch the first episode, so now it's okay, cool. Yeah, so no, he doesn't brush his teeth, and he lost his teeth because of it. Brush your teeth, people. Brush your teeth. Mm-hmm. That's our PSA for the day. So Brock is sitting here with the granddaughter that he never knew that he had, and they're bonding over making fun of his son, her dad, and his stupid commercial. They're literally watching it over and over and laughing at his stupidity, having fun at his expense. That's an awesome way for a granddaughter and a grandfather to bond, I think, at least in this world.
Unless you're the father.
Yep, exactly.
In that equation.
I'm being facetious. I think it's mean. It's mean-spirited, but it was funny to watch. So he comes in, and of course he has the reaction that you would expect. And he's like, he says, "Brandy, your grandfather is dead." He's like, "Am not." He says, "You are too." And he's like, "Nope." The funniest thing about this scene, besides the wealth of quotes that come from it, is how they watch it one more time, and they're like, at Ashy Slashy, you know, what is it? Is something is literally not our middle name, you know, or whatever it was. I forgot. I should have wrote it down. But that was what got me, because they're both saying not, like they had watched it over and over and over. Just like when you see like a stupid video on YouTube or something that you can't stop watching because it's so funny.
Yeah, my middle mic quote came from that scene too, where he said, Brock said, he's got more screws loose than a Nevada cat house. It's very colorful language, off-color language.
It's off-color language without using any expletives. So that's kind of, you have to be a little bit clever for that.
The title's clever. We didn't even talk about that, how it's apparently dead. The word parent is in apparently.
That is very nice.
Yeah.
So there's little stuff. This episode's definitely a grower, I think, because you, after you watch it a second or third time, you start to get the feel and the vibe for it. I still feel like overall that it's a setup for what's coming for the midseason. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But it's not bad by any stretch. And I think it has a lot to suggest itself as a good episode of the television series. So Ash says, "All right, Dad, we got to go talk in the kitchen. Let's go." So the next scene we have, the ghost beaters, or should I say the ghost beaters plus the new dude, have dug up pretty much half of the crap from the cabin. And some of the, like we talked about before, some of the stuff from the original cabin makes its way out, is unearthed. The grandfather clock, the crazy lamp, the one that was swaying back and forth, and the movie projector all make appearances. But it's only when Kelly finds the dagger does evil come out to play. And then we get the famous Ramakam scenes of the evil coming through. And I've never seen anybody shoot a bullet at it before, I don't think. But this is what Dalton tries to do, and it doesn't work. So Dalton gets picked up out from under a car, which looks like it would have just been painful in total to have that done. And he gets impaled on a tree, which is pretty nasty looking. You know, it's just sticking like straight out of him.
Yeah, and this is after being pushed with extreme force through the woods before he lands on that tree. Yeah.
And we all know, because we've seen it enough times, that whenever you get pushed through the woods like that, your head is hitting shit the whole way. Mm-hmm. Branches, if not whole trees. You're lucky to make it to wherever you get killed alive. So Kelly, after in the aftermath of this, Kelly is going around with her gun and the flashlight trying to look for Pablo and Dalton. And she's getting a little bit frustrated because she can't find either of them, which I don't blame her. You know.
Well, she's scared, too. And some people respond to fear with anger because, like, they feeling that kind of fear just pisses you off that you're in that situation.
Yeah. Because you don't want to feel it. So you're just like, ugh. So, yeah. And sometimes the anger helps you do what you need to do in a mm-hmm. situation like that. So I think it's a smart human reaction. It's both fight and flight at the same time, maybe. I don't know. Whatever it is, it works.
Well, she knows flight's not an option.
Yeah, and she's not the flight type anyway. She's more the fight type. So here is where we get into a little bit of speculation, because I had in my notes, I wrote, Deadite Dalton tries to trick Kelly into giving him the dagger. Now, we all know that if they have the dagger and the book, then they're pretty much unstoppable, because you can't use the spells from the book to do anything, and you can't use the dagger to kill him. So they've got pretty much all the advantage going into that. So, but Kelly's not falling for it, especially when he tries to pin it all on Pablo. Like, your friend did this. He set us up. He's out here to do this, which is obviously bullshit. We know that as the viewer, but they're trying to plant that seed of doubt. So now, do you think that Dalton has been a plant by some sort of evil force this whole time? Or are the Knights of Sumeria legit and he just turned into a Deadite and the whole thing is just trying to do the mind games that they do?
Well, we're going to see more Knights of Sumeria next episode.
Yeah.
So I would say they're legit based on that, but unless they're a whole big crew of people who are pretending.
It's possible.
Or maybe they're like, Dalton who?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, well, I don't know anybody named Dalton. You know, nice looking guy. Looks like he could be on Supernatural, but he's not. So this guy breaks free from he turns into a Deadite full force. He breaks free from his impalement and he comes after Kelly. And he really looked, I know we mentioned this show a lot, but he really looked like a Buffy vampire at that point.
Hmm.
The way the face makeup was and mm-hmm. everything when they turn. Because there was a certain stylistic consistency that those vampires had. And he reminded me of one, like, very much. I don't know if there's anything to that. I don't think there is. I think it's just coincidence. But Pablo comes by and he saves the day and just smashes into Dalton with the truck. And as he's yelling, nobody fucks with the ghost beaters. Kelly runs over to where he crashed, and both of them are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last we see out of those three stooges for the rest of this episode. So, something bad is going on, because that means that Pablo and a Deadite are having it out somewhere. Or the Deadite is reading Pablo's chest at this point to try to, you know, to try to do something. Or maybe he's not going to kill Pablo because he realizes that writing on there, now that he's a Deadite, he's going, okay, let's assume that he was legit to begin with. Now he's been turned into a Deadite for sure. And he's saying Pablo could be used as a weapon against Ash.
Well, maybe what if we're, you know, our speculation about the woman that's been appearing to Pablo is correct in the way that she's not for the best interest of the ghost beaters, because he does have the Sumerian writing on him. So she's manipulating him. And if he gets the dagger, which he doesn't yet have, it might be a bad idea because he's under her influence.
Ouch. Yeah. Like, if he touches the dagger, then maybe it's her influence, or maybe it's the fact, because of the writings that he has, if he touches the dagger, there'll be some sort of weird, like, melding, or, you know, and then spirits will be able to work their way through him. Who knows?
We shall see.
Yeah. Like I said, I've come to understand that I'm horribly bad at predicting what's going to happen in the show, which is good, because it means it's unpredictable. It's not like, yep, saw that one coming a mile away.
Well, Metal Mike asked us in his feedback last episode about, you know, if Dalton is killed, Deadite or otherwise, who would do it? And we said Kelly, and it was Pablo.
Yeah, if he killed him, in fact. But so
true. That's right. Because we saw him on the next time on, didn't we?
Right, right. Hmm. So, okay, so we'll just do this first. So Zombie Brock is looking through the food selection at Shea Williams these days, and we have beer, Pop-Tarts, and an old corn dog, and apparently a can of pork and beans, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's more of a weapon rather than a foodstuff in this instance. And so, you know, Ash is real candid with him, and he's candid back. He doesn't try to carry on the act, and he's like, oh, yeah. You know, her guidance counselor told me to just kind of pop in and check on her. And he's like, oh, so your old friend Ruby's back. He's like, yep, that old Sasquatch, lovely slice of evil that she is, called him up from the dead. And so Brock's about to bean him with the can, and he blocks it. Ash blocks it, and the can flies and hits Brandy right in the forehead, knocks her out. Just can't resist Three Stooges tomfoolery, but it works every time. It's never not fun to watch. So they start their fight, and we get some really good quotes here, too, because he turns on the oven and he's about to put Ash's head on there, or his face, and he's like, I like my kids cooked medium rare. And then Ash flips him around and does burn his face, and he goes, I love the smell of old man in the morning, which is gross when you think about it.
It is gross.
Yeah, because I'm not even going to love the smell of myself when I'm an old man in the morning. So why would you love it when I, but hey, you know, you got to come up with the one-liners. So there you go. It was kind of fun, though, because we just did a commissioned movie podcast on Apocalypse Now just a few weeks back, you know, so it's obviously a reference to I love the smell of napalm in the morning. So they crash around the house for a little while, doing a good job of wrecking what was already a very unkempt house. That house needs a lot of work, or it needs somebody to come in and do a good cleaning, because neither of them is going to do it. So Ash ends up taking off his hand and having the conveniently placed chainsaw right there, and he proceeds to get Brock right in the guts. And of course, this is the only part that Brandy sees, and she stands there while she gets literally gallons of blood sprayed all over her.
Did you mention how she got kicked in the head, too?
No, that's right. She did get kicked in the head. See, that's another thing. They had to find inventive ways, and I think they delivered that. They had to find inventive ways to keep her out of commission and not seeing what was going on, because everything in her eyes had to seem like it was Ash's fault in this episode. And they ended up doing that, but they had to get creative with it, and they did. They delivered on it. So he gets him with the chainsaw, and she gets sprayed with blood and decides not to move and stand there and, you know, take the spray. And then when she's done, she looks at him and says, oh, he tries to explain, and it's not, she's not having it. She says, I wish you were the one who was dead. And she leaves.
Harsh.
And he's just like, kids. And then we get the credits rolling, and instead of a rock song, we get a duet between Bruce Campbell and
Lucy Lawless.
Lucy Lawless singing about kids and how they're just no good little pieces of crap. And it's funny because at the end, she talks about all she had to do to raise the kids and scrimping and saving and living with your father.
Who's Robert Tappert?
Yeah. I thought that was a nice touch to it. But it's a very teenage moment, you know, when teenagers get mad at their parents and say like cruel and hurtful stuff that they don't really mean, but they're hormonal at the time, and they just say it, and they slam the door to their room or to the house and they leave. And you know, as the adult, you kind of just have to suck it up and go, all right, how do we make this right at the end of the day? And that's going to be a doubly hard task for Ash, because he's just not good at day-to-day stuff. Now he's got to be good at being a parent. So good luck, bud. You're gonna need it.
Yep, he's got a lot working against him, and it keeps piling up.
So we did see the preview for next week, and Brock is alive. And he looks like he's on the side of good, at least ostensibly.
Yeah.
We see that Ash and crew are seeing some more of the Knights of Samaria. You do see a little quick flash of a Deadite Dalton, and you see Pablo on a motorcycle doing something that looks really, really dangerous. And so I'm assuming everybody saw all that, but if you didn't, and that's spoilery, not really. We've only got a few more days till it comes out anyway, by the time you hear, well, not really. Because this will come out Tuesday, and then we'll have till Sunday. So, but I don't think that's going to rain on anybody's parade, because it doesn't really give away anything. So, all right. So that concludes our coverage of the episode. We go into feedback.
Yes. Before we go into feedback, we like to remind everybody that we like reviews. So if you've been listening to this podcast and you've been meaning to give us a review, please pause it and head over to iTunes and write us one. And if you're shy, you don't want to write anything, you can just go ahead and hit some stars.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying to get more traffic come our way. And one of the ways that we can do that is to raise our profile on iTunes, and reviews help out a lot. So we're trying to, we're going to start talking about this a lot more. We're going to push for reviews. So please, please, please go out there and review us. And thank you very much.
And also, we have a Patreon account, and you can find a link to that on our website at www.noship.net. We actually have ad-free episodes of our coverage of Ash vs. Evil Dead available, as well as coverage of other shows that are only available on our Patreon podcast. All right, so we are now in feedback, and we have one piece of feedback this week, and it's from Scott Pike. And he says, Episode 3 of Season 3 is the funniest and scariest of the season so far. A far and above and better balanced and executed episode than most of the series. The horror fed the comedy, and the comedy fed the horror, just like Evil Dead 2. 10 out of 10. I only gave that to the first episode an 8 through 10 of season 1, and the final two episodes of season 2. Rest in peace, Dalton. You may have been right, but you were kind of a jerk. Poor Brandy, you had one real dead-eyed experience and can't take anyone's word on things, and the scary stuff keeps happening out of your sight. Evil Dead at its best. Three Stooges meets Lovecraftian horrors. Great ending song, and Ruby joined in. Ha 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 ha. So he thinks that Dalton was right about Pablo?
I think he's assuming that he is correct. I'm talking about Dalton at this point. He thinks he's right before he turns into a deadite because, you know, working off of the assumption that he had, the evil shows up. So he doesn't realize that the Kondarian dagger being dug up did that. He feels like Pablo brought that on them. Now, I don't feel like he's right. I have to disagree with Scott on that because I don't feel like he's right. And I could be proven wrong on this very easily, but I feel as though somebody who is part of this group that's been around since the 1400s fighting this specific evil should know about the Kondarian dagger and should know that the evil's going to come looking for it and try to get it back. So I don't feel like Dalton was right. This is Pablo we're talking about.
We shall see. I don't want him to be right.
You know, even if it seems like in the next two or three episodes that Dalton was right, I think at the end of the day, he'll have been wrong. Because it wouldn't have been right to kill Pablo.
No, it wouldn't have been right. No.
So that's where we're at. That's where I'm at with that.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah,
that's it for feedback.
Appreciate it. All right. So before we sign off, we are going to have Steve's horror pick of the week. And this one is a film that you guys might be familiar with, but if you're not, you need to get yourself acquainted with it quickly as possible. Like as soon as you give us a review and turn this off, go and buy it on Amazon or go to the store or download it, whatever you do these days to watch a movie. But before he was known for The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, and King Kong, Peter Jackson made a nifty little horror film called Brain Dead, which if you live in America, it's going to be called Dead Alive. And this is a what you would call a slapstick comedy horror film about zombies. And you trust me, if you like horror, you like comedy, and you like zombies, if you like all three, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, or if you like any one of the above, watch this movie. You will not regret it. This has some of the most insane, inventive, and gross out zombie stuff that I've ever seen, and nobody's even tried to do some of this stuff again.
It's one of my favorite horror movies.
Yeah. It starts with a Sumatran rat monkey that bites somebody. And then the zombie epidemic starts. But it's unlike, you just have to watch it. I can't do it justice by spouting out a bunch of adjectives to try to get you to see it. But it came out in 1992, and it is directed by Peter Jackson. And it's kind of gained a cult following since the success of his movies that he did with Tolkien's work. But before that, it was considered a pretty dismal failure because it made no money in the theaters. It was a financial failure. But now, I mean, I would like to see what the figures are now just on DVD alone that people went back and said, what, that guy made a zombie movie? And then never mind Meet the Feebles, but we might save that one for another time.
And there's The Frighteners he made. And
mm-hmm. That's an underrated film too, actually.
And then what about the one that came out before Brain Dead? Bad Taste? Was it Bad Taste?
Oh, Bad Taste. Yeah. Bad Taste. Now that, that might be a pick for another. That's not strictly horror, but it's worth seeing.
It's definitely got some horrific moments.
Actually,
the regurgitation share scene was pretty gross.
What'd you have to do, Barry? Drink some Chuck? So anyway, that's my pick for the week is Brain Dead, aka Dead Alive, or I should say that the other way around since we're Yanks, and it's going to be known as Dead Alive if you try to look for it anywhere around here. All right, check it out, and thank you guys for listening. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em. Sleep tight.
Don't let the deadites bite.